Welcome back to University of Minnesota Extension's Nutrient Management Podcast. I'm your host, Paul McDivitt, Communications Specialist here at U of M Extension. Today on the podcast, we're talking about ag, drainage, and nutrient management. We have five members of Extension's nutrient management team: Dan Kaiser, Jeff Fetch, Lindsay Pease, Brad Carlson, and Fabian Fernandez, to cover the basics and beyond. Welcome. Why don't you each give us a quick introduction?
Hi, I'm Jeff Vetch. I'm a soil specialist or nutrient management person at the Southern Research and Outreach Center in Waseca.
Daniel Kaiser, I'm a nutrient management specialist with U of M Extension, housed at the St. Paul campus.
Brad Carlson, Extension Educator, work out of the Extension Regional Office in Mankato.
Lindsay Pease, Nutrient and Water Management Specialist at the Northwest Research and Outreach Center in Crookston.
And I am Fabian Fernandez, a Nutrient Management Specialist here in the St. Paul campus, and I work primarily on nitrogen management in corn cropping systems for crop production and water quality.
All right. First of all, can you explain what happens when we drain soils?
Yeah. So if you think about the soil as being actually a matrix of, you've got your soil particles, of course, which you can think of like tiny little rocks, but they're the mineral part of the soil. But then you've got the area in between the soil, which we would call pore space. And then, of course, there's the soil water, which is also part of the soil. And, of course, there's organic matter also. So when we fill the pore space completely with water instead of having air in there, we, of course, are eliminating oxygen, which is necessary for plant growth, root growth, and microbial activity, certain types of microbial activity, and so forth. What we're accomplishing with drainage then, of course, is trying to pull the water back out of the pore space to the point where we've reintroduced air into the system. And so if you think about the drain tile as being a pore itself, which it really is, it's just one really great big one, you're just simply flowing the water by gravity when it becomes saturated and is no longer held to the soil particles by gravity and or water tension, I should say. And it's just simply dripping, if you will, into the drain tile and then, of course, running through the tile system, the drainage system, based on the slope that we established on the tile and so forth. So we think about our drainage systems, their design of the drainage systems in terms of a drainage coefficient. It's important to remember, though, that because we'll continue to move water into the drainage system just simply based on its being in, at a point of saturation or above field capacity, which is having all your pore space full, the amount of water going through the drain tile is sort of fixed. The drainage coefficient relates to the amount of water we can take away in 24 hours. And so if we think about frequently in western Minnesota, we would design to a quarter inch drainage coefficient. That's going to drain a quarter of an inch of water spread over an acre or whatever area you want in 24 hours. As we move towards the eastern side of the state, it's more common to be up to a half inch drainage coefficient. But the important thing to remember about that is that's the speed that we're moving the water out at, not the amount of water that we're actually moving. That for the most part, as long as the soil is drained, we're going to drain the same amount of water out of the soil profile. It's just simply a factor of how fast it's going to go, and that's really determined by the saturated hydraulic conductivity of the soil, and then how deep and how far apart we put the tile lines, as well as, of course, it's impacted by the outlet and the capacity of the outlet to take the water out away from the field.
And I think it's important, too, to think about, really, there's sometimes a lot of questions about drainage over-draining the soil, but really you're just bringing it down to the level, to field capacity, where the plant starts to take up the water. You're only removing a small part that's gravity drainage, and it's not over-drying the soil, so you're not taking water away from the plant. And I think that's an important distinction to make.
It's basically an easy way, I guess, to understand it is if you have a sponge and it's in a glass of water and it's floating in that water has no place to go, the sponge is full of water, or maybe a glass with this very, very tiny holes, that's what the soil without a tile drain would be like. It will drain slowly, and first all the free water will drain, and then the water in the sponge will start to drain to a certain point, and then whatever is left after when you squeeze the sponge, that water will be the field capacity water that is still in the soil. So the tidal drain, what it drains is basically the free water that is in that system, not what is held by the soil.
What are the impacts of drainage on crop production and water quality?
Well, of course, probably the biggest factor we think about these days is nitrates. Nitrate is negatively charged, as are the clay particles in the soil, so nitrate is not held in the soil. And so for that reason, it'll move with the water. And so there's been obviously a lot of focus on nitrates in water, both surface and groundwater, and the extent to which we're taking water away from the fields through our drainage systems, there's going to be some nitrate in that. And there's been a lot of attention drawn as to whether drainage systems are actually causing the problem. They certainly, it can't be denied, they're a conduit of the problem. Whether they actually are responsible for it, I don't believe that they are. It's more of a factor of the environmental conditions in the field. But to that extent, if we don't manage nitrogen properly in our fields, if we apply too much or use practices such as the wrong type at the right wrong time and so forth, we can lead to having higher losses in nitrate through the drain tile.
And from a phosphorus standpoint, there's been a long-term belief that the phosphorus, once it's in the soil profile, it stays in the soil profile. And I think this is it's a good time when you're talking about drainage to really think about the fact that actually there is a little bit of phosphorus that's always leaving in its soluble form that's going to leave with drainage water. And, you know, we knew that this was happening even back in, you know, the 1970s, but it was kind of an amount that was considered to be negligible. And now why kind of all of a sudden you're starting to hear these water quality concerns with phosphorus in freshwater systems is because we're finding out that that amount of phosphorus that's leaving through the tile that we thought was negligible is actually enough to promote growth of algae in freshwater systems. So all of our freshwater lakes in Minnesota, you know, can be at risk if you have high phosphorus losses.
We've had research plots at Waseca, and Jeff has been directly involved with those. Got established in the mid-1970s, monitored phosphorus and nitrate. Not a lot of focus on the phosphorus. Those numbers exist, but we've done an extensive amount of looking at the nitrate. And so what we tend to see with the water flow out of those drainage plots is obviously a lot of that happens prior to planting. So obviously it's wet and saturated in the springtime, and we see most of the drainage coming through the drain tile at that time of the year. Consequently, a lot of the nitrate losses from that time of the year when the crops start growing and using water out of the profile, then we see the amount of water flowing through the drain tile really going down significantly to diminishing to the point where it doesn't exist in a lot of years. And we also, if you look at the dynamics of nitrate loss through the drain tile, a large percentage of that then, of course, mirrors the loss of water. But the thing we have to recognize is, in most cases, that's not nitrogen that was applied for the coming year's crop. So to some extent, there's going to be nitrogen that might have been left over from the previous year's crop that's going to be lost. And then in addition to that, we recognize that significant amounts of nitrogen are mineralized from soil organic matter. And that happens by microbial action. As long as the soils are warm and they have moisture and air, you're going to have that effect. And so we typically will black layer corn around Labor Day, but we don't cool soil temperatures down to 50 degrees until more or less about the 25th of October. So that's about 6 weeks of time where the soils are warm enough to see significant mineralization of nitrate in the fall with no living plant out there to take it up. And so a lot of the data from Waseca indicates that a large portion of the nitrogen that we moved through the drainage systems was actually some of this accumulated mineralized nitrate that came from previous year. And you know, for that reason, there's not a lot we can do to impact that with nitrogen management. There's not a lot that we can do to impact that. I mean, we'll maybe talk a little later about some of the strategies we can do to deal with nitrates in water, but a lot of whatever it is that we're going to do doesn't have a whole lot of effect on that nitrate.
Yeah, and you know, your question was about the crop production aspects. I think nobody can argue against the fact that when you drain the soils in soils like in Minnesota, it's probably one of the most productive things you can do to soils that need that drainage. We do have the issues with nutrients that we started to discuss right now, but in reality, the other option is not very much of an option for these soils because the ability of us to produce crops in these soils is really linked to that drainage. I mean, we started doing tallow drain since the 1800s in Minnesota, and there is a reason for that, and it's exactly that, is that we're able to produce crops because of that. One thing that is interesting that we haven't really touched on is the fact that with drainage, we not only impact the ability for nitrate to move faster out of the soil and phosphorus to a certain degree, but also in terms of carbon and carbon storage, we introduce oxygen, and so that reduces the amount of organic carbon in the soil over time. We have a study actually where we are comparing drain and undrained conditions, and that's one of the things that we noticed is that there is typically more carbon in the sites where there is no drainage than the sites where we have drained the soils. And so that impacts the ability of the soil to do a lot of other biological functions potentially, and maybe even some of the physical properties of the soil over the long term. But really and truly, I don't think we have looked at that in great depth to really understand what is the what are the changes that happen because of that drainage.
One of the key impacts or factors that the production increase in by using drainage or ag drainage is that we're getting the oxygen in the soil and we're enhancing root growth. With enhancing that root growth, we're also increasing the uptake and utilization of nutrients that are already in the soil, and that's critical and that's really key, and that's every nutrient. Having a better root system is going to make nutrient uptake more efficient, and that's going to increase production as well.
Yeah, if you look at some of the history of drainage, you know, particularly in the more near term, the amount of drainage being installed really took off starting in the mid-1990s. Of course, that correlates to when the climate started to get a lot wetter. But it also correlates to when yield monitors first showed up in combines, and the you know, through anecdotal experience, when you talk to farmers, they'd look at what happened with the yield monitor in places where there was good drainage when they went over the tile, and they saw what the yields were, and they saw what it was when they got farther away from the tile, and it didn't take much to do the math, you know, that my yield was suffering by 20, 30, 40 bushels an acre. You could start multiplying that times the crop price, and then start calculating out the number of years, and all of a sudden it was an easy sell to the banker. They could walk in with the yield map and just say, hey, look, see this? This is how fast this is going to pay for themselves, and loans were instantaneous, you know, because it was very clear on how well that paid.
How does drainage affect nutrient management?
Well, you know, in terms of the nutrient management, we've been discussing some of these things kind of along with crop production, but one of the things that, again, is very important to recognize with tile drainage is that while we increase the potential for nutrients to leach out of the field, without tile drainage, the biggest concern is that then we lose nitrogen through denitrification. And we have seen years, actually, in this particular study where we have looked at drain and undrained conditions, where we need more nitrogen pretty much every year. There have been very few exceptions where pretty much every year we need more nitrogen in the undrained soil than the drain system to optimize the yields. And so that's telling me right there that if we don't drain the soils, yes, we are not losing nitrogen through leaching, but we are losing actually more nitrogen through denitrification. Or the other option is that the crops are not able to develop as well. As Jeff mentioned, when we drain the soils, the crops are able to develop a better root system and take advantage of everything that is in there. And so whether it is that we are losing more nitrogen through denitrification or that we are hindering the plant from really taking advantage of what is in there, we have a plant that is less effective, we end up actually needing more nitrogen to get to the same level of yield as we would in the drain system. And so not draining soils is not really the solution to manage nitrogen.
I thought it was interesting, Jeff, you could comment because this was your project, but they've got currently got a study on their drainage plots there at the Southern Research and Outreach Center that's investigating the use of cover crops. And there was one of the trials I know that it required a higher amount of nitrogen to achieve optimum yields, yet that particular treatment actually had lower losses through the drainage tile. And so that's really the effect that you guys were talking about, was that actually if we optimize crop growth, we're positively impacting water quality because you're not leaving nitrogen behind then further to be lost.
Yeah, we were using cereal rye prior to corn planting, and cereal rye was a good scavenger of leftover nitrogen following the soybean crop, but that left less nitrogen available, and the synchrony of that N release from the cover crop back to that subsequent corn crop maybe was not ideal, and it resulted in taking a little bit higher N rate to produce the same yield. But at the same time, it was very effective at minimizing the amount of nitrogen or nitrate nitrogen that left the profile into the tile drains in that early spring period prior to that corn crop having enough demand for it to utilize it in the production.
The only other thing I'd say about drainage and its impact on nitrogen management particularly is just frankly that good drainage opens up the window in our heavier soils in southern Minnesota where they're trafficable. That allows us a wider application window, gives us more flexibility for how we're going to manage nutrients and when we're going to apply and so forth. And so from that standpoint, it does give us better tools at our disposal than undrained soils. That can be very difficult if we have to come in season and do a split application, or can be very difficult to be sure that you're going to get your nitrogen applied in a timely manner. If it's, for instance, before planting and so forth, you may be waiting to plant in order to get your nitrogen applied because you don't know that it's going to be too wet after that to come back and so forth. It just adds a lot of flexibility to the management system.
Yeah, and the one other aspect that we haven't talked about yet really is the temperature of the soil too. When you've drained the soil and you've got the air in there instead of water, it actually warms the soil up faster, which is also a really important thing up here in Minnesota. So that's another factor. You may actually be able to get into your fields a little bit sooner, not just because of less moisture, but because they're a little bit warmer as well.
How can we minimize nutrient loss through drainage systems?
So there are several things that can be used, and I would say that they all have their good things and their not so good things. We were talking earlier about cover crops, for instance, and we noticed that with cover crops you can capture a lot of that residual nitrogen, or in the case of what Brad was mentioning earlier, some of the mineralized nitrogen mineralization that happens after the crop reaches physiological maturity. If you have a cover crop, you can basically utilize a lot of that nitrogen, take it out of the system into the cover crop so that you don't lose it. And we've seen that, especially in some of these last few years where we have had really wet falls, where you measure soil nitrogen before physiological maturity of the crop, and the soil is basically bone dry. There is hardly any nitrogen in there, and very little water as well. And then we start getting mineralization, and then with these large rain events that we are seeing in the fall, we start to get some of that nitrogen flushing out of the system. If you have a cover crop, you're very effective at potentially capturing some of that. The challenge is, that's a good thing. The challenge is that sometimes, depending especially on when you terminate the cover crop, you can actually, it could result in having to add additional nitrogen to the system in order to produce the cash crop. And so that's one of the issues. There are other options like managed drainage. I can think of the word managed drainage.
Control drainage.
Thank you. Control drainage, where it's a way to try to do the best of two worlds. Take the excess water early in the spring when you need drier conditions and warmer soils for planting, and then maintaining a lot of that water in the system. So basically closing the tile so that you don't drain the whole water that is in that profile, so that it's available for the crop later in the season. And by doing that, you can also potentially reduce the amount of nutrient loss, because simply you're just draining for a very short time early in the spring, and then before harvest, if there is need for that, and then you maintain most of that water in the system, so that helps keep that water in the system and instead of draining it out. So those are some of the others, and there are others that my colleagues, I'm sure, want to talk about.
I think looking at it, I think Fabian hit the key there, is if you don't have water movement, you don't have loss. But the problem is with the rainfall events we have, I don't think we can necessarily count on that. And kind of getting back to one of Lindsay's points, with the phosphorus side, we just finished up a study looking at, different volumes of water moving through the upper surface of the profile. And you see, essentially the concentration coming through really wasn't varying based on the volume. So really our concentration was dictated more by the soil test itself. So if you look at a risk assessment for phosphorus, I think it's relatively easy, because we start getting to more ranges above the optimum level. We know that risk tends to increase greatly. And you look at that point, you're risking really a negative return on investment at that point too, so there's economic implications to that as well. With nitrogen, we know that same thing can happen, but it's harder to judge what that optimum rate within the field would be. So, in a ideal world, the best way is looking at, as Fabian was saying, some of those controlled drainage situations. If you could limit the water movement off site, you really significantly limit the risk for loss.
Really, there's, and we've already kind of mentioned this, but not really organized it this way. There's three suites of ways that we can reduce nutrient movement into drainage water. There's nitrogen management, nutrient management, and so that gets into the whole 4 R's and following best management practices. There's vegetation changes, particularly the cover crop one that we've been talking about. And then there's engineering practices. So that would include the controlled drainage. It would include saturated buffers. It would include running water through bioreactors, as well as potentially constructed wetlands that might be strategically located in a landscape. And so there's really that four groups. The thing I like talking about or focusing on when we do a lot of our education is that the cheapest thing you can do to keep nutrients out of the water is following nutrient best management practices, because those are designed not just for environmental performance, but they're also designed to be most profitable for the farmer. So theoretically, if you're doing that kind of stuff, that's the first easy step you can do. Some of the other things, I think the vegetation stuff is still a bit of a developing science. And then, of course, the engineering practices, probably the biggest problem we have with those is initial costs. Most of those practices, now some of them, controlled drainage may not be quite so expensive. The thing you got to remember about controlled drainage, though, is that the research shows it doesn't reduce the amount of nitrate in the water. It just simply reduces the amount of water running out. And so you have less nitrogen running into surface water, but it's accomplished just by reducing the amount of drainage. Some of the other practices, a lot of the data has shown that they will only remove 10% of the nitrate on an annual flux and so forth. Part of the problem with these, so for instance, like with saturated buffers and bioreactors, is they are designed to not impact the performance of the drainage system in the field, and so they've got a bypass. And of course, if we're losing the majority of our nitrogen, the majority of our water in March and April and right pre-planting, in a lot of cases, then that water is flowing through the bypass and it's not going through the treatment. So those can be real variable in their performance. I know a lot of the research that was done related to nitrogen management and the impacts on drainage was done at Waseca. I know, Jeff, maybe you want to talk a little bit about some of the timing work, the split work, the nitrification inhibitors, and some of that kind of stuff that you guys have done through the years.
Well, yeah, we can certainly talk about the different BMP things and their impact, but I think it's important to remember that the biggest factor by far is cropping system. the difference between row crops like corn and soybeans in nutrient loss, if we're, especially if we're talking about nitrogen, versus a perennial crop like alfalfa or some other perennial. It's just night and day difference. And there's none of these other factors that even come close to limiting the amount of nitrate loss in a drainage system compared to that cropping system going from a perennial to a row crop. But once we're in a row crop, then the most important thing is probably rate. Putting on the right rate and getting that rate as fine-tuned as we can without limiting production is going to have the greatest impact. After rate, there's lots of other things we can do. It can be source of N, and anhydrous ammonia is going to be the best source. We can look at timing as an option, but in some trials we've shown that timing really doesn't change the total amount that's lost all that much. What it does tend to do is change when it's lost. And then placement isn't a big factor when it comes to nitrogen loss, unless you're at least in the ground or in tile drainage water. But those are the key factors. Just always remember that the cropping system is the major one, and there's really nothing else that comes close. But doing those other BMPs can give us little nuggets that just get us better and better, but it's not a perfect solution.
And I would add just a couple of things in terms of the nitrogen rate. I think that's right on, that the best management practices when it comes to nitrogen rate, that's the best thing that we can do in terms of the management that we apply. You know, all the other things that we do, they don't really make much of a difference. And we see consistently, whether it's directly in the water or indirectly by looking at residual nitrates in the soil, that if you apply to about an optimum end rate, the amount of residual nitrogen doesn't really change between, let's say, a check plot where we apply no nitrogen in all of our research plots. You know, we have different rates. You look at all those rates up to the optimum, and the amount of residual N is about the same. It's a flat line. And we start to see a real increase in the amount of residual once we start applying above that optimum point. And so really trying to target that optimum is important because of environmental reasons and also profitability. Going below that is going to reduce yields without really impacting the water quality aspects. And I think that's a really, really important thing to keep in mind. The other thing that I wanted to mention in terms of the controlled drainage structures is, or for that matter, not having drainage at all, you know, is that we do a trade-off of problems. When we have, especially with these torrential events that we are having more frequently, if we don't have a way to move some of that water out of the system, what we are trading off is nitrate in the water versus phosphorus and soil in the water. And so which one is a worse evil?
Yeah, and I guess I'll jump in here. I mean, I've done a lot of work with controlled drainage structures when I was in Ohio, and you know, hope to do some when I'm in Minnesota too. You know, if you're doing controlled drainage, if you're interested in that management, what you want to do is you do want to make sure you have enough space. You're not closing your tile system off completely, because then you will allow some of that water, some of that rainfall to infiltrate into the soil profile. So you're not creating just a situation where you're trading drainage, subsurface drainage for surface drainage. And so if you're kind of maintaining that, you know, at least a foot below the ground surface, we've seen that really you're minimizing your risk of surface runoff. The other thing I just want to add is if you have a lift station, you're really already doing controlled drainage because that lift is only pumping when you need the drainage. And so if you turn off your lift station during the growing season, then you can simulate controlled drainage really pretty easily and cheaply, because you'd be saving money on electricity.
I just want to say one last thing, and because I want to just reiterate something that Fabian said, and that just simply is that I think a lot of people think that we can improve water quality by lowering nitrogen rates maybe to a suboptimum level, and the research shows pretty clearly we don't really see a reduction in the amount of nitrate running through the tile line when we lower the rates below the optimum productivity. It's really not that significant, and so from that standpoint, that's not really something that we would look at I mean, even beyond the fact that it's certainly not profitable to the farmer, it really doesn't produce a lot of environmental results either. So that's not really something we think about as being part of our toolkit.
All right, that about does it for the podcast this week. We'd like to thank the Minnesota Agricultural Fertilizer Research and Education Council, AFREC, for supporting this podcast. For the latest information on nutrient management, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at UMN Nutrient MGMT, where you can also send us your questions for future podcast episodes. Thanks for listening.